Welcome to another edition of The Eggs Away, a podcast where leaders of industry and government share their thoughts on defense contracting in Canada. Welcome to another podcast of The Eggs Away. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Colin Cook, President of the Marine Industries and Shipbuilding Association. Colin comes to us with a diverse background of economic and policy awareness. He is the former Director of Business Development at the McDonald Laurier Institute for Public Policy, an advocate that seeks to improve policy and governance in Canada. Before that, Colin was the CEO at the North-South Institute, the former organization dedicated to Canadian foreign policy and international development. Prior to that, Colin served several years in the financial industry, in banking and investments. Colin agreed to speak to me today to talk about the marine and shipbuilding industries and their vital role in Canadian defense. Welcome, Colin.
Good morning, Alex. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, thanks for joining. This is a topic close to my heart. I've been involved in several shipbuilding programs, so I'm really looking forward to our conversation. Maybe if you can, if we just start off, if you can share with us, what is the Canadian Marine Industries and Shipbuilding Association, and what's your role and your mandate, in especially as it relates to Canadian industry and defense?
So the Canadian Marine Industries and Shipbuilding Association is about 4 years old. We are looking to be the national voice for the shipbuilding sector in Canada and across Canada. We've got some exceptionally good regional players, but we were lacking a national player. And so my mandate by my board, my members, is to raise the awareness, to create new B2B links, to collaborate and work and push government to work with industry in effective and efficient ways, and increasingly as well to look at international opportunities for our Canadian companies. And if I may say, it's a really exciting time to be part of this sector. That's in broad strokes, we're looking to build, support, and maintain ships in Canada. And I think that pretty much sums it up.
And so I noticed that you're more than just shipbuilding, you're into the marine side of the house as well, which really means, I think, everything above the hull. Is that right?
We are. So perhaps I'll go back in time. There was a Canadian Shipbuilders Association. It was established actually at the tail end of the Second World War in 1945. What many people don't know or aren't aware of is Canada was a shipbuilding powerhouse in the Second World War. We had 15 shipyards producing both steel and wooden-hulled ships to the tune of about 1,000 vessels over the course of the war. Indeed, there was we did over 400 10,000-ton merchant ships. And interestingly enough, we really didn't have the capacity before the war had begun. But partway through, we really hit our stride. So in 1941, we put to sea one 10,000-ton merchant ship. In 1942 through 1944, we averaged one every 4 days. Our shipyards were cranking out ships proportionally like the United States was. Mm-hmm. Now, as the war was coming to a close, you can imagine that there were 15 shipyard owners who were looking at the future and they weren't seeing good things. And so they put together an association. That was the Canadian Shipbuilders Association. That entity had good years and bad, as the sector had highs and lows over the next number of decades. And the last really big and exciting time in shipbuilding was in the 90s, as Canada was building the Halifax class of frigates. When that period passed, our industry went into a bit of into the doldrums, so to speak. And the last iteration of the Canadian Shipbuilding Association was in the early 2000s, and it was mostly a government relations or a GR type shop pushing for positive change on the shipbuilding front for things such as the National Shipbuilding Strategy. And around the time of the launch of the National Shipbuilding Strategy, the person who was in command of the the Canadian Shipbuilders Association came down with a serious illness. And it really took the wind out of the sails of the organization. And the association essentially drifted away. So about 4 years ago, companies in the sector, primarily those in central Canada, were saying, you know, we really do need a national voice. Nobody seems to know what's going on in different parts of the country. We need to be working together. We need to be aware of each other. We need to start working more collaboratively with the government of Canada and the provinces. And so we were stood up at that point in time with our mandate to support companies that build ships, that produce parts and components and systems for ships, and also who do the maintenance of ships. And so the organization went from being a more or less shipbuilders only association mm-hmm. to an association that is for the entire sector. So everything from the blank page design and the class societies at one end, through the welding systems, through to the shipyards, right through to the breakers and those who dispose and recycle our ships at the end of their lives. So it's the whole gamut from A to Z of the shipbuilding sector.
Okay, and does that include the mission system companies that install the electronics, the radars, and all of those things as well?
Yes, sir, it does. We do have some Canadian-only or Canadian entities in that space, but quite often they are Canadian subsidiaries of multinationals. But yes, we do have defense companies in the marine space that are our members, and a good number of others who are looking at becoming members.
Okay, so your goal then, if I can reflect back what I heard, your goal is perhaps multifold, but one of them is to create a better awareness among the industry itself of what shipbuilding and marine industries are doing in Canada and how they can collaborate and become a more powerful force. And I assume the other side of that is just awareness to the government and to industry as overall to make the Canadian shipbuilding and marine industry more competitive on an international scale. Is that right?
That sums it up beautifully. One of the challenges, and again, partly due to the fact that we are such a huge country and we are spread thinly, typically along our southern border, we don't necessarily know what's going on one region over, one community over, one province over. Mm. And so part and parcel of what I'm trying to do and what this association is trying to do is simply awareness. Right. If you are aware of opportunities and successes and even failures that are happening in other jurisdictions in our country, you can engage with them. You can take advantage of them. You can learn from them. So there are so many exciting things that are happening across this country. That basic awareness building is key to it. One of the things that we've been doing successfully, I like to suggest, over the last couple of years is a newsletter. And the newsletter goes out to some 1,100 entities across the country, or individuals, sorry, across the country, and increasingly around the world. And it's becoming a must-read document for a lot of our bureaucrats, because mm-hmm. it is their way of taking a quick snapshot as to what's going on that they need to be aware of. And so that's one of the sort of basic building blocks of the organization, is just awareness and information.
Okay. So is one of your mandates to develop a Build in Canada policy?
To the very best of our ability, Canadians should be building ships for Canada. And so I'm not going to be wedded 100% to that that statement of, you know, should we do all of our ships in Canada, because there are always exceptions. But to the very best that we can, yes, Canadian ships should be built in Canada by Canadians.
Okay. So there are people who argue, and I'm not saying I put myself into this camp, but there may be listeners who are saying, so wait a minute, can't we get ships built and serviced offshore less expensively than we can in Canada? And doesn't the Canadian government have a fiduciary responsibility to consider all those options? So how do you address those concerns?
There are quite a few different angles that I would take to explore that question, because it's a very fair question. And yes, the government of Canada needs to be aware of what the global marketplace has to offer. One thing I would probably start with is the acquisition of a vessel is probably about 25% of the cost of it from its initial build to the time that you recycle it and dispose of it. A good 75% of the expenditures on that vessel are to maintain it, to upgrade it, to look after it, to make sure that it is doing its job effectively, environmentally soundly, and it's there for you when you need it. If we don't build ships in Canada, then we are going to have to send them somewhere else to be able to have them serviced. It is unlikely that we would be able to have a robust system for looking after all of our ships if we have no technical knowledge as to how they went together. So that is one aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But there's a sovereignty piece. And sovereignty can be, we can look at it from a number of perspectives. We're looking at a scenario where, again, most Canadians aren't aware that somewhere between 80 and 90% of all that we consume come from or touch ships with some components of them coming from elsewhere in the world. Shipping and our shipping lanes are incredibly important to all we do. And we can't be reliant on other countries and their companies to keep us in business. We need to make sure that we can look after our sea lanes by ourselves, for ourselves. And it's not to suggest that some other countries may not want to help us, but there might be just scenarios where there are too many ships in the queue. And if we're not important, then we're at the end of the queue and we end up waiting for extraordinary amounts of time to get things looked after. On the build side, we have an issue that I, again, would rather see Canadian companies, Canadian workers, Canadian know-how producing these vessels, as opposed to looking at subsidized countries and subsidized companies in other countries. And countries, some countries who would be inclined to borrow our technology for other purposes. I was recently looking at some interesting photos of an international a container ship being built in a Chinese yard. And right alongside, you know, the next berth over is a brand new Chinese aircraft carrier. So needless to say, there is going to be some technology bleed or know-how bleed in a scenario like that. And I'm not necessarily comfortable with that in certain geopolitical scenarios and situations. Finally, I guess I would make the point that building ships in Canada turbocharges the Canadian companies that participate in the process. The Halifax class back in the 90s gave the good housekeeping seal of approval to a whole bunch of Canadian companies who are now world players. They participated in that program, and as a result, other countries and other companies around the world said, well, if they're good enough for the Royal Canadian Navy, they're good enough for us. And, you know, Thornton Bearings is a great example of that. They now do over 95% of their business internationally because they got that good housekeeping seal of approval by participating in the Halifax class and doing it well. But defense side too, L3, CAE did some of the technical systems on the Halifax class. They're now global leaders in their particular areas of expertise. So doing things in Canada might look a little expensive at the front end of things, but the benefits that it gives to the Canadian industry, the related Canadian industry, and the opportunity to be able to look after these vessels throughout their life expectancy here at home. Both of those things to me are critically important.
Thanks for that really comprehensive answer. I was going to tug on the sovereignty issue, but you covered that really well. So other branches of the Canadian forces, like the Army and the Air Force, they seem to purchase offshore, at least the acquisition is offshore, and then they find Canadian companies to do a lot of the servicing. Is that something that the Canadian Navy can emulate, or should, in fact, the other branches be looking at what the Canadians are doing in shipbuilding and think about how they might want to consider a made in Canada policy? I guess what I'm asking is, what's different about naval and marine procurements compared to, say, tanks and aircraft?
I think that the way to look at that would be you're comparing apples and oranges and bananas. But perhaps even just apples and oranges. Ships are incredibly complex and not easy to move if they're not working. You can put a tank on a even in an airplane and send it somewhere. You can take a plane apart and send the engine back to the States or wherever it was manufactured. There's also economies of scale. When we buy tanks, we tend to buy a lot of them, or planes, we tend to buy a lot of them. And as a result, the maintenance facilities that we have in Canada can always have the appropriate, what would have a reasonable amount of turnover and constant use. When we buy ships for Canada, they tend to be a relatively limited number of examples, and sending them somewhere else tends to be quite a challenge. One other way of looking at the apples and oranges thing is, I was at a recent event talking about submarines, and somebody put it in a rather blunt fashion that a submarine is actually more complex than a spaceship because of the environment and the fact that you're doing everything with, you know, your hands tied behind your back. Okay, there are challenges in space, and we wouldn't want to lessen those in any way. But actually being at the bottom of the ocean in your submarine, trying to effectively do whatever it is that you're trying to do and avoid people who are trying to prevent you from doing it, is incredibly risky, incredibly complex. And the systems required to be able to allow you to leave port, do your mission, and get back safely are arguably more complex than a spaceship. So if we're going to be able to look after that, we probably are best to do it ourselves, as opposed to relying on some foreign country, some foreign company, or some foreign facility to be able to look after them.
That's fascinating. I'd never heard that analogy before about a submarine being more complex than a spaceship, but it certainly strikes home, you know, logically. So Canada has the innovation, science, and economic development, industrial, and technological benefits. Oh my God, what a mouthful. the ICED ITB program, basically offsets. And so it requires, in a lot of the programs that it's involved in, it requires defense contractors to spend 100% of their contract value back into Canada. So that's a pretty broad brush. You know, it's just saying, hey, spend it somewhere in Canada. So building ships and servicing ships in Canada is very different from the ITB program. And I'm wondering if you can just offer some ways in which directing ships to be built in Canada or encouraging ships to be built in Canada is different, perhaps even better than the ITB program.
I will not suggest that I'm an ITB expert. That is something that I aspire to, which is a really embarrassing thing to say, that I would actually really want to have a thorough understanding of a very complex program. But in your introductory question, you're kind of hitting the nail on the head. It is a good program, and good things come from it, but it is not focused enough on affecting positive change in the marketplace for Canadian companies. It would be infinitely more effective to, again, going back to my Thornton Bearings example, mm-hmm. to simply integrate good Canadian technology into the new builds as often and as effectively as we possibly can. That, to me, is the best way forward. I recognize and acknowledge that it's not a simple process. And from the defense side of things, being able to invest in educational facilities, for example, as an offset, can be of great benefit to the entire industry. Mm-hmm. So ITBs are not evil. They just need to, and sometimes they're really effective and very helpful. But there's got to be some new ways to be able to encourage integration of Canadian solutions into new Canadian builds. It is a bit of a chicken and egg thing, because you have the scenarios that I've been talking about, the bearings manufacturer, and they kind of needed to be part of a Canadian system in order to be able to sell effectively internationally. Mm-hmm. But the Canadians seem to be saying, yes, well, have you been selling internationally so that you're good enough to be used here in Canada? So we do have a bit of a chicken and egg challenge in this country.
Exactly like the recording industry.
Yes. Now, but on the flip side of that is, there are so many good things that are happening in our sector right now. And there are so many innovative, interesting, technologically advanced companies that I think things will change in the not too distant future. And so revisiting the ITB program and seeing how it could be tweaked to be a little bit more effective to looking after the SMEs in our sector, I believe is a well-warranted exercise. So I won't dump on it. It's got some great aspects. Could it be improved? Like any program anywhere? Yes.
Okay. So there are some people who argue, and yours truly is probably in here, that Canada has created a crisis of its own making through decades of Navy procurement delays and failures, you know, to the point that, like, Canada now has no choice but to resort to some offshore panic buying, really to close a self-inflicted gap, because they don't have the ability to put Navy and Coast Guard ships in place when they need to. So, you know, and the problem here is that creating the capacity to build ships in Canada takes time. So how do you address this situation? How do you mediate against that condition?
I think part of it is, you know, a lot of what you said is certainly accurate. Where we are today, I think, is we've gotten past that. I believe that we have the facilities. We have a good number of companies now doing maintenance and repair work in the civilian sector that weren't doing it 10 years ago. We have our major yards ramping up and looking at either actually building ships today or are on the cusp of doing it. I think that we are... the industry side of things is arguably past that period of time where they were retooling, revamping, and reinvigorating. The companies out there now have the person power, and they have the gear, and they've got the facilities. Could they improve on all those? Sure. But right now, they can do the job. So we're now at a place that I think we're going to start, you know, seeing a significant change. There was an article actually out in the newspaper just today talking about the first of the CSC, the replacement to the Halifax class, apparently is due to be started in 2024. Just a couple of weeks ago on the West Coast, the new science vessel, the keel was laid down. I think that we will see some exciting things happening in Quebec before too much longer. On the civilian side, we've got our Ontario yards are very busy, including doing some really important life cycle extension work for the Canadian Coast Guard, which they would not have had the capacity to do not that many years ago, but can now, and they can do an excellent job. And we've got across the country, we've got the smaller facilities, either building small vessels, such as tugboats, harbor craft, lifeboats, barges, or are repairing those. And I think we've got the capacity to be able to do it. So if we were having this conversation a few years ago, I would be acknowledging that, yes, we still have a ways to go. Because we are having this conversation today, I would suggest that we're good to go. And I think that the government of the day is also good to go. We can't wait too much longer for movement on some of our classes of ships that are doing yeoman's work and have been for quite a period of time. So I think that things are going to change, move forward, and we're going to see an awful lot of activity in the very, very near future.
That's nice to end on such an optimistic note. So I'm kind of out of questions, but that's really interesting and fascinating. I really like that. So listen, Colin, do you have any closing remarks or anything that you'd like to add?
I just want to say that it is an exciting time in our sector. It really is. And it's everybody there. Yes, there are the big NSS yards and they're doing some cool stuff. The medium size yards are doing some cool stuff. But we start looking at all of the small players, the startups on the coasts, doing some really interesting technologically advanced work, subsurface technologies, both on the environmental side as well as on the military side. We've got advanced work on environmental systems. We've got, you know, I'm stumbling here in terms of my enthusiasm, but there are so many good things that are happening from coast to coast to coast, that it is just a great time to be part of it. And what then becomes really interesting is that it can be exciting for the next generation of people in the sector. There's automated welding systems. There are CAD systems that are not only designing ships but helping keep them in proper maintenance for their entire life cycle. There are all sorts of things that can appeal to anybody and everybody coming out of school that are in our sector. So I'm going to go round in circles and say yet again, it's an exciting time to be in the marine sector, and I'm thrilled to be a part of it and to try and be one of the champions to make sure that that we are all collaborating and doing a good job together.
Well, Colin, thanks so much for joining us and infecting us with your enthusiasm. I think that it's been a really good discussion. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Alex. It has been a pleasure.
I've been speaking with Colin Cook, president of the Marine Industries and Shipbuilding Association, and you've been listening to The Eggs Away.
And thanks for everyone for joining us on this podcast. We hope that you've enjoyed it, and I hope that you found it informative. EGSA receives no advertising revenue or funding for this podcast. EGSA is wholly owned, privately held Canadian company and has no ownership affiliations with any other companies. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the position of the EGSA Consulting Group. This podcast is copyrighted by the EGSA Consulting Group. For more information on this or any other topics, we invite you to join us online and to communicate with us at any time.